Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we discussed a very rasic verse yesterday, text 13, canto 10, chapter 26. I think at the end I'm going to go back and read some more of that commentary because of its significance. It says lots of things that are important for understanding Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So this morning we'll be discussing verses 14, 15, 16 from Canto 10, chapter 26. And here's the translation for text 14. Now the speakers, again it's the elders of Vrindavan, the cowherd men, speaking to Nanda Maharaj. On the one hand, this boy is only 7 years old, and on the other, we see that he has lifted the great hill, Govardhan. Therefore, O King of Vraja, a doubt about your son arises within us. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, short, already they have described Krishna holding up Govardhan. They repeat the description again in this verse because of their astonishment. Jiva Goswami writes, that Krishna was only 7 years old, a small child, can be understood from his birth and growth. This can also be understood from seeing other boys' growth. By lifting Govardhan, it could be understood that he was endowed with great powers by which he could kill Putana and other demons, and that he was the natural shelter and object of natural prema. Because of his powers and his being the shelter and object of prema, he cannot be a child. He must be a devata, and among devatas, he must be extraordinary, since one does not see such things in other children. But since he is only 7 years old, it is not possible for him, from him, to be anything except a child. Because he lifted Govardhan, he cannot be a child. Because of these two opposing qualities in one person, we have a doubt. This child is other than an ordinary child, or is some remarkable devata. Sanatan Goswami writes, though your child is an ordinary boy, today we have experienced his great powers directly. They speak in astonishment. Because of the contradiction of being an ordinary child and having great powers, doubt arises in their minds. This is his aspect as a normal child. Holding up Govardhan is his aspect of great power. Since an ordinary child cannot hold up a big mountain, there is a great contradiction. Because of this, we see him as a child and as the Lord. But that perception is also contradictory. Thus, we have a doubt. Though he is the source of avatars, avatari, parentheses, showing sweetness, he manifests as an avatar, showing powers. Sweetness. This is Sanatana Goswami. One side is sweetness, avatari, indicating sweetness, and the other is showing powers, that's avatar. Though he is an avatar appearing in this world with powers, he is the source, avatari, showing sweetness. But we cannot be sure, because he definitely shows ordinary aspects, and aspects as the Lord. Paragraph. Because he has manifested with powers, tasmat, we do not have fear, shankha. Thus we cannot give up our attraction to him. Paragraph. Oh, Lord of Vraja, because you control Vraja, everyone here is fortunate. Because you are the Lord of all of Vraja, you can destroy our doubt. Because he is your son, that doubt does not arise. Because he is repeatedly described as the son of Nanda, doubt does not arise that he is the Lord or the son of Vasudeva. Attachment for those forms does not arise. We cannot give up attachment because he is your son. This attachment is unconditional. Nirupadi. He exists eternally as your son. Attraction to him because of his form and qualities, which are upadis, are also unconditional. Nirupadi. The eternal nature of his qualities will be discussed elsewhere. Now, there's reference to this verse in Jiva Goswami's 10th canto commentary. It's called Vaishnava Toshini. And this is from Chapter 45. Krishna said, Dear Father, because of us, your two sons, you and Mother Devaki always remained in anxiety and could never enjoy our childhood, boyhood, or youth. Paragraph. Krishna addresses his father first, Vasudeva, since he is more prominent. He addresses him as father to arouse within him, Vasudeva, paternal affection. Since Vasudeva did not have strong affection because he had knowledge of Krishna as the Lord. In saying that they could not enjoy his Kishore period, he means that they could not enjoy his full Kishore period, but only part. He does not mean to say that he has now passed the Kishore period, since it is said Kishore Napa Yovanau, they attained Kishore period, but did not yet enter the Yovana period. They had just begun their Kishore period. One should consider the order of their age. According to the people of Braja, he lifted Govardhan when he was only 7 years old. Referring to this verse that we just read this morning, text 14, translation. On the one hand, this boy is only 7 years old. And on the other hand, we see he has lifted the great hill Govardhan, therefore king of Vraja, a doubt has arisen within us. Paragraph. He held up the mountain on the third lunar day during the waxing moon of Kartik month. He completed the seventh year on the eighth lunar day of Gona Bhadra month. Out of affection, the people stated that he was 7 years old, when actually he was 7 years, 2 months, and 10 days old. Taking that date as a marker, one should calculate the age at which he performed the previous pastimes. One should also consider the following statement and the example of quick development seen in a prince. So now it's referring to Canto 10, Chapter 8, Text 26. Sukadeva Goswami is speaking, O King Parikshit, within a very short time, both Balaram and Krishna began to walk very easily in Gokula on their legs by their own strength without the need to crawl. Back to the commentary. Therefore, it was not impossible that Krishna lifted Govardhan when a little over 7 years old, since he was, moreover, the Supreme Lord. He killed Trinavarta when he was only 1 year old. Damodar pastime took place at the beginning of his third year, during Kartik month. Some days after that, he went from Gokula to Vrindavan. After 2 or 3 months, Krishna began herding the calves. So that's when he's still 3. While herding the calves, he killed Vatsasura, Vakasura, and Vyomasura. When the third year was complete, and he entered his fourth year, in the autumn season, Brahma stole the calves and cowherd boys. So there it is. Fourth year. He entered Pogunda period at that time. However, it is said, quoting Canto 10, Chapter 12, Oh, great sage, how could things done in the past have been described as being done at the present? Krishna performed this pastime of killing Agasura during his Kaumara age. How then, during his Pogunda age, could the boys have described this incident as having happened recently? Now, this is Canto 10, Chapter 12. Chapter 12 is the chapter before killing of the Agasura demon. Paragraph. Thus, because of the theft, there was delay in Pogunda manifesting. Pogunda age appeared when Krishna was 5 years old. He began herding the cows on, that's graduating from calves to cows. He began herding the cows on the eighth lunar day of the waxing moon of Kartik month. In the summer of the fifth year, he subdued Kaliya. In the sixth year, he had fun herding the cows. In the beginning of the seventh year, he entered Kishore period. At that time, he killed Denuka on going to the forest of ripe tal fruits. That evening, the gopi showed first signs of love for him. Quote, this is chapter 15, the next chapter after we finish Brahma's prayers. Chapter 15, when with their bee-like eyes the women of Vrindavan drank the honey of the beautiful face of Mukunda, And thus they gave up the desires, the distress they had felt during the day because of separation from him. The young Vrindavan ladies cast sidelong glances at the Lord, glances filled with bashfulness, laughter, and submission, and Krishna, completely accepting these glances as a proper offering of respect, entered the cowherd village. Paragraph. The pastimes of subduing Kaliya and killing Dainuka are narrated out of order. In the summer of the seventh year, Palumba was killed during the Ashvina month of his eighth year. He played the flute during Kartik month. He lifted Govardhan. This is when the inhabitants exclaimed that he was only 7 years old. Wow. Okay, now text 15, PBT translation and purport. Nanda's going to reply, "Oh, cowherd men, just hear my words and let all your doubts concerning my son be gone. Some time ago, Garga Muni spoke to me as follows about this boy." And the PBT purport, Srila Siddhar Swami comments, quote, "The words previously heard from Gargacharya awakened Nanda Maharaj to the truth about Krishna, and thus, by Nanda's constantly remembering his activities, all thoughts about their being impossible ceased in him. Now he instructed the cowherd men with these same words." Vishwanath, quote, "I will relieve your doubts by reciting what I heard from Garga Muni. Narayana has entered my son by the force of my performance of past pious activities to deliver me most mercifully from danger." Unquote. Jiva Goswami, fearing that there would be a decrease in affection because of fear and respect in realizing that Krishna was the Lord, comma, by directly revealing that he had directly appeared to display unlimited qualities of the Lord, comma, Garga had not directly stated Krishna's supreme position of power, Nanda informed the cowherds by Garga's words, which he understood to mean that Krishna was a child, but he had some extraordinary qualities similar to the Lord. "You should hear my words, which are potent. Since I heard from Garga, your doubts should disappear about this boy. He makes it understood that Krishna is his child, by using the word Arbake, this boy. Your doubts about your son should disappear. To increase their affection for Krishna, he identifies Krishna as their son as well as his. Hear what Garga said concerning this son of mine. By using the word Anam, this, he speaks as if Krishna were present, though he was actually absent, since he was the object of great attraction for them and was present in their hearts at all times. By repeating words like Arbake and Kumaram, he indicates that Krishna is none other than his own son. Hear what Garga said clearly about this boy to me, not by hints." then reference to this verse appears in Priti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami. In answer to the question, Nanda speaks using authoritative words to resolve Krishna's powers. This indicates that sweetness is their permanent realization. Swabhava Siddha. The commentary gives us this insight into different ways of regarding Krishna and how those who are Brajvasis, that is, they're absorbed in his Madhurya feature or his sweetness feature, how they view his opulences, so it's stimulating our understanding of how to view Krishna's pastimes. Swabhava Siddha. Swabhava. Swabhava is a term that's used in the process of creation. In the process of creation, along with the living entities, goes kala, karma, and swabhava. Swabhava can be thought of as the tendencies, the nature, born of the modes of nature that souls have, but in the body of Mahavishnu, they're dormant because creation has been withdrawn. But they still have their tendencies or swabhava. Or the affinity for certain modes. The affinity of the certain modes is not manifest because everything's suspended. So when creation begins, there's swabhava. That's one of the potencies that goes with jnana bala kriyacha. So it's swabhava, this kriya, making the karma and guna of living entities awakened again, is with creation. But there are those that are not part of creation. They also have their swabhava. They have their transcendental swabhava. And their transcendental swabhava is attracted to the sweetness aspect of Krishna. So when Krishna is exhibiting the Aishwarya feature, always underlying is their sweetness feature. So Garga spoke the way that he spoke in order to support the swabhava, the natural tendency of Nanda Maharaj to view Krishna in a certain way. Nanda is repeating those words so that the residents of Vrindavan can similarly have their natural tendencies supported. He says, my child. And he's endowed, Garga said, with special potencies. So, here now there's reference to this verse, text 15, that we just read. O cowherd men, just hear my words and let all your doubts concerning my son be gone. Some time ago, Garga spoke to me as follows about this boy. And then, further, as Garga Rishi spoke these words to me and returned home, there's like, 8 verses of what Garga said. After Garga Rishi spoke these words to me and returned home, I began to consider that Krishna, who keeps us free from trouble, is empowered by Narayan. So Garga, what part of what he said is Krishna would protect you from danger. So the protection from danger was an investment of potency from Narayan. At least that's what he understood from what Garga Rishi said. By the word, quote, what Garga spoke to me, Nanda indicates that the conclusion is clear. The words Using words like arbaka and kumara suggest his natural appreciation of Krishna's sweetness, taking him as a small boy. So we're going to now move on. Text 16. This is our final verse for this morning. Translation of text 16. Garga Muni had said, "Your son Krishna appears as an incarnation in every millennium. In the past, he assumed three different colors, white, red, and yellow, and now he has appeared in a blackish color, purport. This, and the next six verses, through text 22, are taken from the eighth chapter of this canto, in which Garga Muni instructs Nanda Maharaj about Nanda's son Krishna. The translations found herein for these verses are based on those of his divine grace, Prabhupada. In chapter 8, where the verse originally appears, the reader will find extensive purports by Srila Prabhupada." Here's Jiva Goswami's commentary for text 16. Nanda repeats Garga's words until verse 22. One should see the previous verses, 13 through 19, of chapter 8, for the meaning. However, in verse 22, there's a slight alteration of the words. In verse 23, Nanda indicates he is repeating the words of Garga. And Sanatan Goswami, Nanda quotes Garga's words to instill faith in the cowherd men through text 22. Nanda's changed words, text 22, since Garga's words did not indicate Krishna's greatness, but rather decrease his greatness, since he is to be protected by others. He goes through some Sanskrit considerations. He is saying, do not be astonished by his astonishing activities. They were aware of Garga's words previously, for after killing of Baka, they said, chapter 11 of canto 10, "The words of persons of full knowledge of Brahman never become untrue. It is very wonderful that whatever Garga Muni predicted, we are now actually experiencing in all detail. However, now the words taken together in seven verses has special significance." So here's canto 10, chapter 8, starting with text 13. Do you want to hear all this? Yeah. This is Garga speaking to Nanda, the first one. "Your son Krishna appears as an incarnation in every millennium." Then it gives the other three colors. And then in parentheses, "In another Dwarpa Yuga, he appeared as Lord Ramachandra in the color of Shuka, a parrot. All such incarnations have now assembled in Krishna." Purport. long. Partially explaining the position of Lord Krishna and partially covering the facts, Garga Muni indicated, quote, "Your son is a great personality and he can change the color of his body in different ages." The word grnataha indicates that Krishna is free to make his choice. In other words, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead and may therefore do whatever he desires. In Vedic literature, the different colors assumed by the Personality of Godhead in different millenniums are stated. And therefore, when Garga Muni said, quote, "Your son has assumed these colors," he indirectly said, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because of Kamsa's atrocities, Garga Muni tried to avoid disclosing this fact. But he indirectly informed Nanda Maharaj that Krishna, his son, was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Paragraph. It may be noted that Srila Jiva Goswami, in his book Krama Sandarbha, has enunciated the purport of this verse. In every millennium, Krishna appears in a different form, either as white, red, or yellow, but at the same time he personally appeared in his original blackish form, as predicted by Garga Muni, exhibited the power of Narayana. Because in this form, the Supreme Personality of Godhead exhibits himself fully. His name is Sri Krishna, the all-attractive. Paragraph. Factually, Krishna is the source of all avatars, and therefore, all different features of the different avatars are present in Krishna. When Krishna incarnates, all the features of the other incarnations are already present within him. Other incarnations are partial representations of Krishna, who is the full-fledged incarnation of the Supreme Being. It is to be understood that the Supreme Being, whether appearing as Shukla, Rakta, or Pita, is the same person. When he appears in different incarnations, he appears in different colors, just like the sunshine, which certainly contains seven colors. Sometimes the colors of sunshine are represented separately. Otherwise, the sunshine is observed mainly as a bright light. The different avatars, such as the Manvantara avatars, Leela avatars, and Dasha avatars, are all included in the Krishna avatar. When Krishna appeared, all the avatars appeared with him, as described in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.26. Quoting, "Avatarahi asankyeya hare sattva nidher dvija yata vidha Vida sina kulya sarasa siu sahasrashaha." The avatars incessantly appear like incessantly flowing water. No one can count how many waves there are in flowing water. And similarly, there is no limitation of the avatars. And Krishna is the full representation of all avatars because he is the source of all avatars. Krishna is Amshi, whereas others are Angsha, part of Krishna. All living entities, including us, are Angshas, Mamivangsha, Jivaloke, Jivabhuta, Sanatana. These Angshas are of different magnitude. Human beings, who are minute angshas, and the demigods, Vishnu Tattva, and other living beings, are all part of the Supreme. Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Katupanishad. Krishna is the full representation of all living entities. And when Krishna is present, all avatars are included in him. Keeps going. It's a long purport. Paragraph. The 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam describes the incarnations for each yuga in chronological order. The Bhagavatam says, Krite Shuklas Chatur Bahu Tretayam Rakta Varno Syau Dvapare Bhagavan Shamaha and Krishna Varnam Trisha Krishnam. We actually see that in Kali Yuga Bhagavan has appeared in Pita Varna or a yellow color as Gaurasundara, although the Bhagavatam speaks of Krishna Varna. To adjust all these statements, one should understand that although in some yugas some of the colors are prominent, in every yuga, whenever Krishna appears, all the colors are present. Krishna Varnam Trisha Krishnam. Although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears without Krishna or blackish color, he is understood to be Krishna himself. Idanim. Krishnatam Gataha. The same original Krishna who appears in different varnas has now appeared. The word asan indicates that he is always present. Whenever the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in his full feature, he is understood to be Krishna Varnam, although he appears in different colors. Prahlad Maharaj states that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Channa, that is, although he is Krishna, he is covered by yellow color. Thus, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas accept the conclusion that although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears in Pita color, he is Krishna. In quotes, 11.5.32, that Krishna Varnam Trisha Krishna. The commentary, I'm sure, is from the Acharyas, is also long. I'll read. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur commenting on 10.8.13. So this is Garga's words to Nanda. In this verse, Garga informs Nanda that his son is a Mahapurush. Quote, your son takes birth in every yuga and has the colors of red, white, and yellow. Unquote. Grihnata indicates that he accepts by his own will. Now at the end of Dwarpa Yuga, he has taken the form of Krishna. By perfection of the worship of these forms in the respective yugas, the son of Nanda attains sarupya with those forms. Unquote. That is what Garga wants to convey to Nanda. The actual meaning, however, is hidden. Paragraph. Pointing his finger at the son of Nanda, he indicates that the forms with white, red, and yellow color are his parts or angsas. And now he has been born in his full form as Avatari. Source of the avatars, Krishna. The sentence can mean all the white, red, and yellow forms indicating all the Manvantara avatars, Lila avatars, and Purusha avatars have all come now within the form of Krishna. The Asmi has appeared, with all the anshas within himself. Paragraph. In the 11th canto, it is stated that the Lord comes in Satyayuga in white color, in Treta Yuga in red color, and in Dwarpa Yuga in Shama color, and in Kali Yuga in Krishna color. Specific colors and names are linked to specific yugas. Taking that statement into account, then does the yellow color, as mentioned in the verse, belong to an avatar or not? Paragraph. One should not say that because, quote, asan, unquote, indicates past tense for three avatars, that yellow can refer to a fourth avatar appearing in Dwapara Yuga, because the topic is concerning yuga avatars only. He goes through some people say and refuting some people say. The explanation is as follows. The two words, yata and tata, occur as a pair. Whether they both appear or only one appears, the other must be understood. In this case, the sentence should read, quote, just as yata, now in Dwapara Yuga, the source of avatars, appears, attracting all within himself with black color, Krishnata. So in Kali Yuga, Tata as well. During the first part, all the avatars appear within him when he takes a yellow form. Idanim now is taken in a slightly broad span from the end of Dwarpa to the first part of Kali Yuga to apply to the appearance of both avatars. It's like doing a Sanskrit jugglery thing. Okay, go further. The yellow form is mentioned in Mahabharat, he quotes. Though this mention is in Mahabharat, it is not mentioned clearly in other places in scripture. The reason is that this is a secret matter. Prahlad mentions that in an indirect way in the 7th canto, quote, because the Lord appears in a hidden way, in Kali Yuga, he is addressed as Triyuga, unquote. Because he is hidden, his color and mood being covered by other colors and moods, contemporary people cannot recognize him. The reason for this invisibility is Krishna's desire to know the sweetness of prema by merging with Radha's body, taking up her emotions and color. Parentheses, she is the most secret of all. Paragraph. This secret is known to the Gaudiya devotees. Bhagavatam 11th canto says, Nana tantra vidhanena kalau vapi tata shunu Krishna varnam trisha Krishna. The hidden meaning of this pramana, which appears in the discussion of yuga avatars, is proved as previously in an esoteric way. And so it goes back and forth. I think we get the picture. It's long commentary. Jiva Goswami's commentary is long. Sanatana Goswami's is long. And that's only text 8, and we have to go through so many more. My head is spinning. How precise our acharyas are to make sure that misunderstandings are cleared with proper understandings. So, obviously it's an important section because it's being repeated verbatim. What was said in chapter 8 is being repeated in chapter 26. So it's important. I think most prominent is, as already stated, what Garga's words were doing, it was giving definition to things. Who is Krishna? That's what astrologers are, that's their occupation. At the same time, so he's not deceiving, but at the same time, he's preserving this language is being used, the natural mood of the resident of Vrindavan. The natural mood is the sweetness mood, that is to see him not as divinity, but as our jiva, or our son. So he's disclosing, in a certain way, the divinity. As he appeared, the translation reads he incarnation, but he appeared in previous ages of different colors. So we're hearing this is by his will. But, you know, we wouldn't know it, that's what it means unless it was explained, because different colors can be different colors without necessarily I choose this one or that one. So the divinity is being revealed in truth, but his divinity is being concealed at the same time. So Nanda has taken the revelation as has already described. He's a jiva that has powers of Narayana for the purpose of protecting the residents of Braja. Me, Nanda, as a king, then the other residents of Braja. This boy will do that protection program with powers that resemble the powers of Narayana. Now, he doesn't say he is Narayana. He has powers like Narayana. So he's concealing at the same time. He's letting him know that the boy will be like this, and that recollection apparently was when Bakasura was killed, they already knew, and now he's repeating it because it's supporting their sweetness aspect, and it's okay. He's my son, he's your son, you have affection for him. That's the sweetness part, because that was like astonishing to them. We feel affection for him, and he feels affection for us that's unwavering. So how is this? Garga's words are to preserve that sweetness, mood, and not disturb it, not eclipse it with the majesty mood. Although he's exhibiting majesty opulences, the sweetness is being preserved. It's very clever, Garga Muni. Very, very clever. And, you know, unpacking the words, it can mean this and it can mean that. And he's not lying. But he is supporting their mood. Because he was engaged to present the names, name giving, and with that the horoscope. So so that we don't have to take up more time during this morning's class. Apparently, all of this can be read on your own leisure. Chapter 8 of Canto 10 starting with the early section where Nanda's words are spoken and lengthy Prabhupada's chapter 8 commentary is comprehensive and extensive, so you can read it at your own leisure. Or leisure if you're from Canada. So let's see if there's some discussion. We're putting batteries in the microphone. So, anything here or anything remote or what?
Maharaj, I had a question or a thought. When you were speaking about Svabhava, when you shared about Svabhava, how this is like affinity for certain modes, I also remember hearing in one of the Vyasa Puja lectures a few years ago about giving up or letting go of our Svabhava and becoming a servant of Krishna, that theme. My thoughts are like a contemplation and question is, what I am now is because of some desires that I had in the past, and that's the manifest, like what I am right now with a particular tendencies and mind and body and all that.
Yeah.
So, but now this has become my, this is like my Svabhava, and at some point it feels like it's just like a cycle, desire and getting some particular nature. Again, this nature itself feeds some desires. Again, it's going like a cycle. And now, when I engage my Svabhava in some services of, some services and, in Krishna consciousness, I am just like wanting to get some more, clarity and, your, words about while engaging my tendencies in serving Krishna, what should I be conscious about or mindful of so that I can so that this cycle will be discontinued of just the desire Svabhava cycle.
Well, Krishna's words to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, Mamandu Smrayudyacha. Engage in your prescribed duty. That's how it Prabhupada translated specifically is Yudya Cha. That's Arjuna's duty. Fighting. Yudya means fighting. And ours is whatever it is according to our Svabhava or psychophysical nature. So we engage in activities in the world according to our nature. Not suppress or deny, but acknowledge, and that is to say, conforming to theistic conduct. We follow Daivi Varnashram, theistic conduct according to the codes of the Vedas given by Krishna. That's, you know, the conditioned svabhava. And Mam Anusmara. Always think of Krishna. Then always think of Krishna becomes possible when there's love. And we don't have love yet. So we're doing sadhana to get to awaken that love. So do your sadhana carefully with the aim of always remembering Krishna. Always remembering Krishna. And the combination of the two, staying under the umbrella, under the protection of Dharma, that is our psychophysical nature, conforming with, in harmony with, in submission to the prescribed ways of engaging ourselves according to our nature, which is different for different natures. Within that incubation chamber, we're growing remembrance of Krishna by devotional practices. And Bhaktisiddhanta describes very nicely in Brahma Samhita something like verse 58. When we do that, those two things, then the activities, according to our psychophysical nature, are as purifying as the direct devotional activities. That is to say, one's body, which means senses, you know, the subtle senses, become purified, because the subtle senses are, along with the mind, those six or 11, those tendencies are what are described as conceptions of life. The material conceptions become gradually reduced. So one may still continue according to one's nature, but one is not propelled, using your word, you know, cyclical, propelled and propelled and propelled and propelled. So that propelling force subsides. The conditioning, mayic, this is me sense subsides. And then one has more freedom. And then the more freedom doesn't mean I stop doing my duties. More freedom means I'm less propelled or compelled by my conditioned nature, and I'm doing my duties because they're duties. But the remembrance of Krishna part becomes more clear. Bhakti is awakening that spirit of doing all things for Krishna becomes more prominent. And then as that evolves further, then one can do anything. Like, you know, a practical example, there's this celebrated photograph of Jayapataka Maharaj plowing a field behind an oxen, where Prabhupada was singing, "Teach by example." He's not a plow department guy, but he was teaching by example, plowing the field behind an oxen. So we may start to do things that are not our nature for the purpose of serving Krishna, teaching by example. So that can start earlier. It doesn't have to, you know, be at a more mature stage. We may do some things that are, at least our senses, it's not really our nature, but we do because it's useful for Krishna's service. For example, supposing somebody's shy. So somebody that's shy, to go on Harinam Sankirtan or book distribution or public speaking, you know, it's panic or fear. It's like, I'm not doing that because it's not my nature. But we do anyway because it's what Krishna wants, and so we do it. And there's purification, other kinds of purification. So the goal is the dedication of all things to Krishna, and the things and the outcomes of those things, the fruits of those things, karma yoga, karma palatyag, and that purifies our psychophysical nature and helps break that cycle that you were speaking about. So the karma yoga principle is an element or subset of bhakti yoga. Dedicate the fruits of our activity to Krishna. It's yours. And that helps us become free from the cycle bondage. So the principle behind our psychophysical nature becoming cleansed is the dedication unto Krishna. There always remember Krishna part. So we don't deviate from theistic conduct, engaging in prescribed duty, according to our nature. That's what prescribed duty means. And dedicated to Krishna. The activity and the fruits of the activity dedicated to Krishna. The bhakti principle. And that's how the cycle can be broken. The impelling force of the cycle. And then there is more freedom. And more freedom and more freedom and free. Bondage is broken. Oh boy. Okay.
This is just a comment from Kishore Prabhu saying that he's still in Mayapur and lockdown and okay. He'll be back. And thank you for the concern. And this is from Thirumala Nayak Prabhu.
Okay, I know.
Is there any significance why Lord Krishna appears in different colors in different yugas, even though he can appear in the same black color? What are the lessons to be learned? Visalaksha Prabhu.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I don't know if there's a lesson to be learned. I suppose by reading those commentaries more, you know, carefully, there may be some reason why there's different colors. And why specific colors for specific yugas, etc. There may be some reason, significance behind specific colors instead of one color, other than differentiation. But the answer to that question, the acharyas would have to say, and I don't know the answer. And I've not read anything where they have said.
Kanik Manjari Mataji asks, many people do not know, Mahaprabhu came to Kali Yuga in secret as in not telling everyone that he was the personality of Godhead.
Right.
Why did he come in secrecy? And many people do not know that he is the supreme personality of Godhead.
What's his reason for being concealed? Obviously, his being concealed didn't last too long. But for many people, it's still concealed. So why did he do it initially? Is because it assisted him in his pastime of teaching by example in the mood of his devotee how to surrender unto him. Sarvadharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja. It assisted him in fulfilling that purpose of mission, teaching, because it would be more difficult to understand he's Krishna serving Krishna than he's a devotee of Krishna serving Krishna.
And this is from Adriana Dimitru. This is multi-part question. So we understand that in Kali Yuga, Lord appeared in golden color as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and in Dwapara as Lord Krishna in sham color. Please could you explain who did he incarnate as in what white color in Satyuga and what was the bodily color of Lord Rama who appeared in Treta Yuga, please?
Well, Lord Rama doesn't appear as the Yuga avatar. He appears in that Yuga with the color that he has. The Shukla and Rakta, the Hamsa avatar is commonly referred to as the white avatar in Satya Yuga. And there are devotees who say, I haven't found any reference for red. And then it seems that one reference that I read is that's Yajna in the Treta Yuga. So I think that answers the question.
And this is from Prashant Pandey Prabhu. If you see Gopi Geet or some other prayers, then it appears that Gopis knew that Lord Krishna is a personality of Godhead. But we also hear that Yoga Maya covers them so that their rasa is not affected by their knowledge. How to understand it?
I'd like to see the references before I would give an answer.
And the final one, Arvind Lakshminarayan Prabhu from Chicago. During all Krishna's pastimes, all his friends and families interacted with Krishna as a regular child or a boy. Could you please explain how was this possible?
How was what possible? Krishna appeared as if he was an ordinary child. How is that possible is the question.
How was his friends and everyone interacting with Krishna as a regular child?
Well, because of Yoga Maya, Krishna wants to enjoy, and there's more intimacy when they don't see him as divinity, and so because of their quality of their love, it worked. They were covered from seeing him as divinity, and they were seeing him as their friend. Even when he showed his divinity, lifting Govardhan Hill and so forth, they didn't see otherwise. Okay.
Amara Mataji asks, what did the cowherds do after knowing these facts about Krishna? At my level, how am I supposed to engage myself after understanding these facts from the class? From this class and Lord Brahma's prayers.
The first part is they had this very, very, very special regard for Nanda. Nanda has accepted the words of Garga as pacifying him. That is, he's my son. That is, he's a jiva. And he's showing special powers that Narayana has invested in him. And my son, for the purpose of protecting us. So I, Nanda, have done some pious activities, and Narayana is arranging for my protection and protection of the Brijvasis, and he's doing that through my son, this jiva, by investment of potencies of Narayana. So something like that is what Nanda understands is his son. And so, you know, they're relieved. It takes away their doubts and their anxiety, whatever. They adopt that view. So how is this going to affect Amara? Well, you know, she now understands better how the Brijvasis regard Krishna's opulences. So if when that lovely day comes, when she reaches the stage of spontaneous devotional service, she'll now be guided how to view the opulences of Krishna. Until then, it's just like, how wonderful is Krishna? Okay, that's it. Anything? No? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.